So, as you can see, this is the title of today's talk. I think Steve earmarked this talk for me for a very, very long time. I don't know why he thought I would have plenty of examples of wrong ways of working and what to avoid. For some context, for the people who are not aware of what I do, for the past 4 years I've been working in football, travelling to matches and games all around Europe and around England. Usually 2-3 times a week I'd be travelling, either in Europe or in England. More recently I've taken over a technical role of management of technology within the UEFA department, so that's all across Europe. But going past the glamour of what everybody thinks this is, of travel and working great games and working in the sport that you enjoy, there's loads of sleepless nights, there's tight deadlines, there's demanding and very impatient clients. So, Steve knows about this, so I guess he's right, and I can definitely...
have a question. In the back of the booklet, it says that you work in the most hated job in sports.
That is correct. That is correct, yes. I sometimes avoid sharing with people what I do. That is because most people actually give you abuse and stuff if you tell them what you do. And apparently it ruins their passion, it ruins their beautiful game. And that's my job. So I am glad to serve the Lord in such a way. However, we're going to first look at some of the passages that you guys have been looking at this morning. So, we've seen in previous talks that there's many examples, there's like a window full of them, of issues in our work and in our workplace, and while we can fix or help to fix some of them, we can't do much about some of the other ones. All we can do is ensure our attitude to work is correct. As Mary shared, the more we recognise we are not enough and we understand our need for Jesus, the more likely we are to glorify God in our work. We can then start to begin to work for Christ and not for man. The glory of God that we should be pursuing comes when we look at the bigger picture, not at ourselves. So that's just a quick recap of what we were talking about yesterday. And today we're going to look at how we can tend to make some of the byproducts of work and work itself take the roles that they were not supposed to be in God's original design for work. And moving even further, I would like us to not just identify some of these issues and idols that we can create in our work, but also find some ways to counteract them. I believe you looked at 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 3 to 10. So we've seen that Paul speaks against the love of money quite strongly. There's a very famous quote from Rockefeller, who was the wealthiest person in modern history. He was interviewed and he was asked, how much more money was enough to make you happy? And his classic answer was, just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. This is a man who was, as I say, the wealthiest man in modern history. And this is what we're taught. This is our culture. We live in a society in which we are measured, or we are measuring ourselves by how much we make, what car we drive, where we vacation, what we spend our money on. And we have, it's quite trendy now to have so many expressions to celebrate the pursuit of money and wealth. I'll give you some examples, I'm sure there's more. We've all heard of the rat race. That's defined as an endless self-defeating or pointless pursuit in a competitive struggle to get ahead financially. The term is commonly associated with an exhausting, repetitive lifestyle that leaves no time for relaxation or enjoyment. Another example, I've got three of these. Another example is the hustle. To strive headstrong and voraciously towards a goal, or to seek out to acquire large sums of money, often by unscrupulous means. And the last one is the grind. It means to work hard, to always be hustling, or otherwise engaged in money-making activities. So, it's quite obvious that we are, as a society, quite entrenched and obsessed by this desire to accumulate more and need more. From your YouTube content creators to your Instagram reels and your books of how to make more money. But what Paul says in 1 Timothy 6 is that that's not what we should be looking for. He is calling us for contentness. And he's actually contrasting the entire passage. That's how he's built the entire passage. We are called to rejoice in what we have rather than pursue the things that we are lacking or do not have. And this is as countercultural as it gets, I think. And it's this sort of thing that actually highlights ourselves in the workplace and in the midst of other people. Because your desires and your pursuits are not what everybody else around you is pursuing. This doesn't mean that I'm saying to not go for the next role in your company. It doesn't mean that I'm saying to not pursue excellence. I'm not saying to stay in a job that doesn't value you to your true potential. That doesn't excite you or doesn't fulfill you. But it is important to get our priorities straight. It's important to run a continuous diagnostic. I like to call them workshops, where you...
Continuous diagnostic?
Yes. Mechanical engineering background is what it is. Of where you are, professionally as well, and how you can improve, again, professionally and personally. You have to make sure you have the right tools, that they give you accurate readings, that you have a good feedback balance. And this leads me on to the first. So I'm going to give you several questions today. I think it doesn't matter as much what I say as it matters what you find in your own lives. So I'm going to give you more questions that will hopefully get you thinking. So first question, how do you assess yourself in the workplace? How do you determine your value? How do you determine the areas where you've grown, where you still need to grow, and the areas you're lacking maybe? What voice do you hear in the workplace? Not in general. But in the workplace, what are the things that you are being told? What are the things you tell yourself about your work? For me personally, a good tool to dig into this has been fasting. I do intermittent fasting, so I do like 18 and 8 hour windows. So I don't eat for 18 hours and then I eat. 16 and 8 hour windows. So I eat for 8 and I don't eat for 16 hours. And I found that really helps me understand what I'm clinging on to. What I find, even though that's simple things sometimes, and there's obviously many ways of fasting. You can fast from technology, you can fast from just your phone as well sometimes. I know Daniel's done some dark fasts, I think. Yeah, like 3 days of nothing. For me it just helps me acknowledge my dependencies and the things that I desire and I hold on to and that I chase. I would encourage you to give that a go. There's many types of it, so you can start off easy and then see what works, because it's a very personal thing. So next part that we've been looking at this morning was 2 Thessalonians 3:6-13. If somebody would read that to me.
Warning against idols. In the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, we command you, brothers and sisters, to keep away from every believer who is idle and disruptive and does not live according to the teaching you received from us. For you yourselves know how you ought to follow our example. We were not idle when we were with you, nor did we eat anyone's food without paying for it. On the contrary, we worked day and night, laboring and toiling so that we would not be a burden to any of you. We did this not because we did not have the right to such help, but in order to offer ourselves as a model for you to imitate. For even when we were with you, we gave you this rule: the one who is unwilling to work shall not eat. We hear that some among you are idle and disruptive. They are not busy. They are busybodies. Such people we command and urge in the Lord Jesus Christ to settle down and earn the food they eat. And as for you, brothers and sisters, never tire of doing what is good.
Thank you very much. So this is the complete opposite of the people who work and hustle and grind for their living. But what is the issue with that? In Genesis, we've seen that God has told us to take over the earth and subdue it. We have been told that we have a duty of care to this world. So just sitting idly, even if you don't necessarily have a job or something, that is not what the Bible calls us to. So I am going to read you Deuteronomy 28:13, which says that the Lord will make you the head, not the tail. If you pay attention to the commands of the Lord, your God, that I give you this day, and carefully follow them, you will always be at the top and never at the bottom. This clearly shows us that we must strive to be the best versions of ourselves at work and not settle. We're not called to just be lazy in any way. And we have been asked to lead. Another example of this is the parable that Jesus gives in Matthew 25:14. I'm just going to quickly go through it. So it says, "Again, the kingdom of heaven can be illustrated by the story of a man going on a long trip. He called together his servants and entrusted his money to them while he was gone. He gave 5 bags of silver to one, 2 bags of silver to another, and 1 bag of silver to the last, dividing it in proportion to their abilities. He then left on his trip. The servant who received the 5 bags of silver began to invest the money and earn 5 more. The servant with 2 bags of silver also went to work and earned 2 more. But the servant who received the 1 bag of silver dug a hole in the ground and hid the master's money. After a long time, their master returned from his trip and called him to give an account of how they had used his money. The servant whom he had trusted with 5 bags of silver came forward with 5 more and said, 'Master, you gave me 5 bags of silver to invest, and I have earned 5 more. The master was full of praise. "Well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in handling this small amount, so now I will give you many more responsibilities. Let's celebrate together.' The servant who had received the 2 bags of silver came forward and said, 'Master, you gave me 2 bags of silver to invest, and I've earned 2 more. The master said, 'Well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in handling this small amount, so now I give you many responsibilities. Let's celebrate together.' Then the servant with the 1 bag of silver came and said, 'Master, I knew you were a harsh man, harvesting crops you didn't plant and gathering crops you didn't cultivate. I was afraid I would lose your money, so I hid it in the earth. Look, here's your money back.' But the master replied, 'You wicked and lazy servant, if you knew I harvested crops I didn't plant and gathered crops I didn't cultivate, why didn't you deposit my money in the bank? At least I could have gotten some interest on it.' Then he ordered, 'Take the money from his servant and give it to the one with 10 bags of silver. To those who use well what they are given, even more will be given and will have an abundance. But to those who do nothing, even what little they have will be taken away.'" So, it is quite clear that God's desire for us is to be good servants of our abilities and of the things that he has placed in our control, in our work. That means looking to work diligently and continuously, not being lazy, and to sharpen ourselves as well in the process, to sharpen the gifts that he has instilled in us. As a final third part that I would like to think about is what parts of work or work itself have we taken and grown attached to? It's easy to find the bad parts, I feel. That's probably the easiest part, right? But these are probably good things in and of themselves. However, allowing them to stay in our blind spots and just be things that we just are happy about our job can allow them the opportunity to grow into something more that give us complacency, that give us laziness. And that means they can, slowly defocus us over time, because it's not something that happens overnight, it's something that can happen over time. And if it defocuses us at work, it means it can definitely impact the amount of change that we can make. It can limit the impact that we have. So, I would like you to think about the things in your work life that affect your view of work, as in what makes your work good, what makes your work bad, but also if it makes your work good, does that mean you are just going to stick with it and not search for more improvements? I'm going to give you some examples. Is it the pursuit of success? The status of the company that you're working in? Is it your role? Your new promotion that you've just got? Is it the people you work with? Or is it the schedule that allows you to do what you think you want to do? Secondly, what is our motivation at work? What drives us? What are the reasons we wake up in the morning and we are happy to get going? Is it to be better than our colleagues? Is it to impress our manager or our supervisor? Is it to prove our parents wrong that we can actually do this, that we do know what we're doing? Or is it to gain their approval, maybe? Is it to get that paycheck that allows you to pursue your actual passions and your actual dreams? Is it to get that raise or that promotion? Are you trying to prove something to yourself? Are you trying to prove something to the world about either who you are or what can be done through you? And all of these things probably won't be your main motivation, but they may be underlying currents of your work. And I'm not saying all of these are bad motivators, but I think it is essential to dig deep within us and be aware of them. Understand how they affect us, understand how they affect our work and our view of work. One of the rhythms I've found useful in my life in regards to this is I usually at the end of each week I take 30 minutes or so to look back at the week, and then I also look ahead to the week coming up. I usually do this alone, with nothing open around me, and I then pray as well. I think for me at least, this is a time where I can look at what I planned to do, how much of it I've done, where I've lagged behind, what I one to do for the next week, and I also write it down as well. This helps me understand if there's things that I keep doing. If this is a recurring theme in my life, right? Each week I just don't do this, right? Do this easily every time, so then, again, maybe I can focus on something else. Yeah. In a short conclusion, I would like us to take away a couple of points. So we can see that the Bible is trying to create that clear dichotomy, that contrast between money and contentness. We, in order to process this better, we need to understand ourselves and have strong, accurate means of diagnosing our strengths, our weaknesses, and the reason why we pursue things. God has called us to work, and He has called us to work diligently. He has called us to work as we work for Him, and that means that we need to strive to grow and use those bags of silver that He has given us. That's something that the text said that He entrusted us with. And then finally, it's good to ask these questions of what areas of our work take too much significance? What areas of work do we find too much meaning in? And what are our core motivators, our core drivers? And then how do they fit within God's vision of work? So, next I am going to ask you to do a small exercise that I personally like to do. So I like to meditate quite a lot, and music is a good conducive of that. So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes and try to focus on the things that you feel and the things that you hear. Whether that's the river flowing in the background, or the soreness of your feet from yesterday's hike. Try to feel all the way to the end of your fingers, and be aware of your heart beating, and of your lungs. Taking in air. I would like you to then start to think about work and what meaning you find in work. If you can then think of how this relationship with work ties in with your relationship with God. I'm just going to play you a quick song. Keep hearing your breathing.
Dust we come, and dust we are, and shall return. Be still, my soul, and let it go. Just let it go. Worry gone.
Somewhat helpful in getting to think about some of these things. My goal for this was to get you thinking, not necessarily feed you that much, because I think our circumstances are quite different. And God can speak into each and every one of our circumstances.